This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, and forgive the sound quality. I am on the plane. Yes, this is only the second recording ever for the podcast from the airplane. I did one several hundred episodes ago, and it's great to be with you. Thanks for joining me. This will not last for long. We've got a client case study coming up with normal audio, so stay tuned for that. Just a couple of quick things before we dive into that. Wow, some interesting and amazing news, and I love this, I must say. I'm no huge fan of Elizabeth Warren in terms of her socialistic policies, but I sure do like the way she goes after the banksters, the criminals on Wall Street, the bankers, the banksters. And she really got after the Wells Fargo CEO. Of course, you heard about this big scandal where Wells Fargo was overcharging massive amounts of customers. There were, I guess, a couple thousand Wells Fargo employees were fired, and their CEO was hit with what's called a clawback. Have you heard of clawbacks? Well, I have been negotiating contracts for many years on various deals I do, and sometimes we have clawback provisions in those. And the clawback provision basically says that if something doesn't happen, if the performance isn't as expected, even if you've been paid, that the other party in that contract, the counterparty, has the right to claw back some of that money. And boy, this is a great clawback. They hit the Wells Fargo CEO with a $41 million clawback over the fake account scandal, and I just love it. It's about time some of these banksters, some of these criminals on Wall Street and at the banks are penalized, because this is it's just unbelievable what they mostly get away with. But guess this time it cost them some real money, so I'm happy to see that. A couple of other things. This was an amazing thing. Last week, we had one of our clients, Drew, on the show, and he posted an article on our content portal. I'm thinking, by the way, of having all our Venture Alliance members and inviting all our Venture Alliance Mastermind members to participate in the content portal and contribute and comment on the articles there. But this is amazing. It's a Bloomberg article, and it says, make six figures. There's a decent chance you've got some challenges. And he takes some of this article out and excerpts it and says, close to half of those who earn between $100,000 and $149,999 per year have, get this, less than $1,000 in their savings accounts. Less than $1,000 in their savings accounts. It's mind-boggling. Some 18% of them have socked away absolutely nothing at all. Nothing. Can you imagine earning between basically $100,000 and $150,000 per year and having nothing in the bank? Well, what does that mean to us as real estate investors? Well, number one, it means a lot more renters. And that's good news for us, because if these people that are making good money, three times the median household income, basically up to three times, if they have nothing in the bank, guess what? They don't have a down payment for a property. They don't have enough savings to buy a property and do any fix-up work or anything. So that means they need to be served. We need to serve them as investors by offering good rental property for them. Some good opportunities there. I think the next 10 years coming at the rental housing market are nothing short of phenomenal. Probably the best they've ever been in all human history. And I've said that many times before. And because of the background noise, let's dive right into our guest here, because I don't know how well this is coming out, how well our editor can reduce the jet noise, but I do want to tell you, I am on a very swanky private jet. I joined a jet club that's not very expensive, actually. I'd be happy to tell you about it. I talked at our Seattle Venture Alliance meeting. I talked about it with our Venture Alliance members. It's really cool. It's like the Uber of private jets. So this plane is a Challenger 300. It's a $25 million jet, and it could go up to about $36 million, depending on how it's equipped. And it's just absolutely beautiful. And basically, as part of your membership, you can take these empty leg flights for free. So it's really cool. I'm on my way to Aspen right now. Coco, my dog here, is here in the plane with me, just roaming around free. And it's pretty cool. And my birthday is coming up tomorrow, at the day after you hear this. So I figured I'd go up and see some friends in Aspen, have a little good time. I plan to rent a one-way car and drive down to beautiful Santa Fe, New Mexico, and then drive to Albuquerque and fly back home to Scottsdale, Arizona. So those are my plans over the next few days. I'll be doing some podcast interviews on the road as I travel. Again, please forgive the sound quality here as I'm in the plane. It will not last as we go to our guest, which was recorded in studio. Also, be sure you check out the properties at jasonhartman.com. Be sure to check out the educational products at hartmaneducation.com. That's hartmaneducation.com. And let's listen to a case study with one of our clients and what he's done so far and what his plans are and why he became interested in real estate investing. Hey, I want to welcome one of our clients to the show. He's got a great case study, if not as a real estate investor, then as a podcast listener, because he's been very loyal, and I'm very grateful for that. He discovered my podcast back at episode 50 of the Creating Wealth Show. So he's been with us a long time. He has some investing ideas and questions and started his own website around it because he likes the asset class so much. And I want to just welcome Brian. How are you?
Excellent. Thanks for having me on.
Good. It's good to have you on. And you're located in Palo Alto, California. Is that correct?
Actually, just moved up to San Francisco a couple years ago.
So you really like low-priced real estate then, I take it, right?
I like paying high rent. How about that?
Yeah. May I ask, how much is your rent? And do you know the value of the property you live in or a comparable value for it? Because I bet you're getting a pretty darn good deal, believe it or not.
Yeah. My rent is $2,500 for a nice two-bedroom here in San Francisco, which is actually a pretty good deal. but it's a two-unit building. I think it might be like $1.4 million, somewhere around there.
For your side or both sides?
For both, for the whole building.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, that's still a good deal. So if yours is worth $750, then you have a 0.3 RV ratio, approximately about 0.33. So that's a great deal. Congratulations. Even if you feel like it's not that great a deal. Yeah, good stuff. Well, hey, you discovered my Creating Wealth podcast back at episode 50. Thank you for listening all these years. What got you interested in real estate investing?
Tracing it all the way back, I actually think it was a book I was assigned in high school to read, which was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And I didn't think much about it at the time, but I feel like those ideas really sank in and, kind of coming out of college and finding my first job, I was, wondering what I should do with my money and kind of revisiting a lot of what I picked up way back in high school.
I have to say, Brian, it's kind of amazing that they actually assigned that book as high school reading. Are you somewhat amazed by that?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a one semester econ class that everyone had to take, and there were, I think, three books we got to decide between, and that's the one I chose. And I've got to say, it was a good decision. Not sure if I knew it at the time, though.
Yeah, the other two were probably like, the Communist Manifesto and Socialism for Dummies, and you picked the right one. I'm just making a jab at our school system and our educational system, but never mind. Okay, so Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that's been the inspiration for a lot of real estate investors for many years now. So that's fantastic. And tell us about your journey. You bought a couple of properties, and when did you start, and just wherever you want to take it?
Absolutely. So yeah, I started listening to the podcast, did that, you know, for probably a couple of years before I connected with your investment counselor, Sarah. She did a great job of kind of holding my hand through the process. I'm probably one of the more needy clients she worked with, but ended up buying my first property in 2011 in Atlanta, and then waited a few more years until my next one, but 2014 purchased in Memphis. And so that's kind of where I am at this point.
Yeah, fantastic. And tell us about your experience with picking the properties and dealing with renting them, managing your managers, good, bad, indifferent. Share it with us if you would.
Absolutely. It's a little bit all over the map as far as the property management side, but the, you know, working with the local market specialist went really well. Feel like I was able to get the type of property that I wanted, and was happy with the price and the rehab job, and the tenants have gone well. The property management, still learning, because, you know, I don't have too many years of experience and don't have too many data points to look at. But in Atlanta, I'm working with a very small property management team, kind of the two people who do everything.
Yeah. And some that can be good or bad. You know, the bad part of small is they don't have as many resources. The good part of small is hopefully you're getting some really good personalized service and ambitious person who really wants to grow their business. So, you know, that can kind of be one way or the other, right?
Yes. Yes. I know who to talk to, which is really nice.
Yeah.
The
that makes it easy.
The flip side is the Memphis properties through more of a large,
more institutional manager. Yeah,
exactly. And they have, you know, I don't know how many 50 people on their team who do everything, and it gets moved from division to division, and, you know, you're not sure exactly who to talk to when it's, you know, they're doing the walkthrough and then they're doing the rehab, and then someone else is showing it to tenants, and there's not that one person who you know, has the whole vision of it. So
right. They've got that sort of delegation of labor type concept. Yeah. You know, the bigger company idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So still learning the pros and cons of each and which I prefer, and definitely early in the journey, but it's good to get these two different viewpoints.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So did you have some questions about refi or 1031 exchange, or did you just want to kind of share some of those experiences with our listeners?
Yes. I want to ask, I have, you know, that property that I purchased in 2011 in Atlanta, and quite a bit of equity has built up, which is a good thing. And
congratulations.
Yeah. And looking to put that to use. So, you know, sometime maybe in the next 6 months, thinking about either doing a refi, pulling some money out and, you know, putting it back into another property, or maybe a 1031 exchange where, you know, again, sell that property and purchase two more.
And that gets to be, yeah, this is one area, Brian, and I'm really glad you brought this up for our listeners, because I have mentioned it on a few of the more recent episodes of the show. And, you know, I've always promoted the idea of refi till you die. It does have a minor flaw to it, though. And the minor flaw is that when you have the good news of a highly appreciated property, like your property in Atlanta, where equity has really built up, usually the rents, of course, don't keep pace. That's the typical way that it works in real estate. And your rent-to-value ratio gets out of whack. So the question is, do you do the refi till you die plan, which is still a good plan, or does it make sense to do what I'm calling the two-for-one plan? And that's where you sell that property on a 1031 tax deferred exchange and buy two more. Now, we had a guest on the show recently who works with us who bought three more. I've done the two more several times recently. I sold a big apartment complex and bought another big apartment complex, a bigger one, and a mobile home park. And that was last year. I did that with one of our clients who's my partner in that deal. I did another property owned single family home and purchased two more. And then I'm doing that again right now. So that's the 2-for-1 plan, but, you know, you might even make it 3-for-1. Who knows? Tell us about your Atlanta property. What do you pay for it, and what's it worth now?
I paid about $82,000 for it, $82,500, and it's I haven't run, you know, good comps or anything like that, but I'd say it's probably in the range of $100,000, $105,000, maybe higher, you know, but Zillow's certainly higher, but I don't think it's much beyond that.
I bet in the next 6 months you're going to capture some more appreciation, because I don't think that screams you need to do anything yet. I think that's still just hang tight and don't do anything quite yet. You said 105,000, right?
Right.
Just want to make sure I heard that correct. What's it renting for? Is it renting for about 850, 900?
It's at 950.
Okay, 950. You know, that's pretty good. And did you put a lot down on that, or do you have a lot of equity? What's your loan balance?
Loan balance is 60,000.
Yeah, okay. So if you did the refi, you could buy one, maybe two more properties with that refinance. I think you need to let it go a little bit longer. And I know you said you were going to do another 6 months or so in it, maybe longer than that before you do anything. Unless you have an adjustable rate loan that you want to get rid of, or a high interest rate loan on that, that is not screaming that you need to do something yet. But I think it's good that you're thinking about it, for sure. Is there a reason that you're really thinking you want to do something, or are you just kind of thinking about it?
I'm really just thinking about it, how to get into more properties and put that money best to use. As far as the equity is probably over 40%, you know, getting to 50%, and that's probably right around the time I would want to think about, there doesn't need to be that much equity in this. Let's put that better to use.
Right, exactly. And here's one of the other things to consider when people are either considering the refi till you die or the two for one deal. And that two for one is, you know, obviously just an expression, right? It could be three for one, could be one for one. You know, I'm just giving an example when I say that. But on the two for one deal, when you sell the property, you really will have all of that equity available to you to buy more properties. On the refi, you're going to be limited to the refinance cash out refi loan to value ratio, which is probably going to be around 75% LTV. So you're not going to get much money out of it on the refi till you die. But on the sale, you'll free up all the equity except the transaction cost, obviously. And you probably need to bank on somewhere around 8% for that on the sale side. And then your transaction costs on the purchase, depending on the type of financing and the area in which you buy the properties, somewhere in the neighborhood of 3-3.5%, about there probably. And so that's what you lose on the transaction cost, but it's less than what you don't get on the loan to value ratio limits on the on the cash out refi. And I'm sure you've thought of that, right?
Right. And another benefit of doing the refi is to get a lower interest rate. So, you know, maybe it wouldn't pull, you know, maybe I'd get 15,000 or 20,000 tops back, you know, spending cash out, but would also have a locked in lower interest rate, which is appealing to me as well.
Right. Okay. So I'm glad you brought that up. That's a very good point. So what is your interest rate now? Do you know it offhand? And, you know, have you looked at rates for new financing? Because getting a lower rate, you know, when you do the two for one, you automatically get to refinance.
Right. And so I believe that one's at 5.5%. So, should be able to get under five
better.
Right
you
now.
You should be able to do better. Yeah. Right. Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think it's good that you're thinking about it. And what are you leaning toward? Do you have a preference?
For simplicity's sake, I'm leaning towards the refi. But the 1031 is appealing too, especially, you know, if I were going to purchase right now, I probably wouldn't be looking in this Atlanta area. I feel like, you know, it has had some pretty good appreciation and might be looking at slightly more. I know it's not a cyclical market, but maybe more linear types. So, you know, that would be another advantage there.
Yeah. And I would classify, and I'm sure you've heard me say this, I would classify Atlanta as a hybrid now. I wouldn't have before. I would have said it was linear, but it obviously had some pretty good appreciation and you enjoyed that along with many others. So I would currently say it's really kind of a hybrid market. So you'd get into a more linear, you'd improve your cash flow. And like looking at the analysis of that, if you bought two more, so you've got 950 now in income, I'm just saying gross, obviously there's expenses, mortgages, debt service, et cetera. But just if you look at it from a very simplistic point of view, $950 per month now, what do you say you paid for it again?
$82,500.
You could buy two more on the refi, and I bet you could bring that that gross income up to about $1,800 per month. You're probably looking at properties on our site and thinking the same thing, I bet, right?
Right.
Yeah. Good stuff. Okay. Well, any other thoughts or questions about that particular scenario?
No, it's really a win-win. I'm just trying to figure out which way's best.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your website and what you're doing with that.
Yeah. So I started a website, rentalmindset.com, just to share my experience, kind of what I'm learning and, you know, share my story. Hopefully that can show it's not too hard to become a real estate investor, and that more young people get into it, because I feel like it's really the best place where someone with a 15, 20, 30 year timeline can really benefit.
And it's a lot better than the other options out there, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's really scary. You know, I've been listening to on Audible some of the Rich Dad books recently, and I've had Garrett Sutton on the show several times. Tom Wheelwright's book, Tax-Free Wealth, is pretty good too. I really have been enjoying that one lately, although taxes are never, like my favorite subject, but we've all got to pay attention to it. And it's amazing how anti-retirement plan those guys are. They're just not into any sort of qualified plans, really. Tom's a little bit more into the Roth plan, but I think overall, at least my take from it, is that they don't like the plans at all. They would just say, go out and buy investment properties and, you know, keep it at that. I'm not quite as down on the qualified plans as they are, but I do see their reasoning for it, and it makes sense. One of the things I've always said is that with real estate in a self-directed IRA, you basically have a tax-efficient vehicle inside another tax-efficient vehicle. And of course, you can't get really desirable financing inside your plan like you can outside of it. But it's not bad. And I don't know. I don't know that I would go so far. Say I had $100,000 in a self-directed IRA, right? I don't know if I would go as so far as cashing it out, paying the penalty, paying the tax, and then investing with that money. They're pretty against it. I was kind of surprised at how anti-qualified plan they are. You know, have you read any of the other books?
No, I really haven't. And
let me make a recommendation to you and the listeners. Garrett Sutton's book, Loopholes of Real Estate, is excellent. At our last Venture Alliance meeting, I gave that book to everybody, all our Venture Alliance Mastermind members. We're all kind of reading it together. We have sort of a book club where we sort of examine different books, and that's been enlightening to get other investors' take on it. But yeah, I'd recommend it.
I'll have to read that one. Yeah, I'm hoping to do some of the book reviews on my website as well. So
yeah. Oh, that's a great idea. Great idea for content. And the one thing I would say is that some of the ideas Garrett has in there, I don't agree with. I think they're a little, no offense, Garrett, I think they're a little old fashioned. But you know, by and large, I think it's a great book. It's really, really interesting. And I love the way he writes and tells stories and gives funny examples of different people in situations. And he always kind of gets his little jab at the government in there. It's really funny to sort of notice that. So yeah, good stuff. Any other thoughts or questions you want to share, Brian?
That's it. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, good. Well, hey, thank you for being on, and thank you for being a client and a listener since episode number 50 way back there. This episode will air in the 700 range on that show, and we might air it on some of our other shows as well. You also attended Meet the Masters back in 2010, it looks like. And did you attend our Atlanta property tour and Memphis property tours, or are those just the properties you bought?
Those are the ones I bought. I've still never seen them, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. How do you feel about that, by the way? And how did you feel about that initially? When you bought, was that scary to buy sight unseen?
That first check is definitely scary. I mean, I'm not gonna say it wasn't, but yeah, I can rationalize it, and I'm not a real estate expert, and so I don't have to do the property inspection, and I hope that I am hiring people who are experts and double checking that. So yeah, I think It's worked out great, and I'm going to continue to do it.
Yeah, good stuff, good stuff. Well, Brian, thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck with your investing journey and your website, and it's great that you're an evangelist spreading the word about the gospel of real estate investing. So we all appreciate that, because it's a great thing, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks. Have a good one.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, HartmanMedia.com. Hartman.com for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guests' opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.